The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. It's I'm doing the show this week from my brand new studio that I built at home in Connecticut. I had a pretty big couple of weeks traveling. Some of you caught up with me in various places. I actually did 8 countries in just the space of 2 weeks, so was pretty exhausted. So needed some time to write the book, finish off the edits on the new book, Augmented, which is coming out in the new year. So it took some time off, and it's the first time I've actually got to use the studio out in Connecticut. So if you guys ever want to visit me at home, you can come and see the studio I built at home. But anyway, to the show, we've got some news. I don't know whether you saw the announcement that Dawala has teamed up with the CME Group to offer their real-time payments internationally now, so it's doing some cross-border stuff. This is pretty interesting. We're seeing a lot more traction in terms of these P2P offshore. We've got Facebook, Dawala, and of course some of the blockchain initiatives. We had our three on the show a couple of times in the last few weeks. They started off with 9 banks in their consortium looking at blockchain technology. They're now up to 25. So everyone suddenly in the banking space is hot on the blockchain. Do they really understand what it means? Distributed ledger, what's it mean? Is this a challenge to SWIFT? If for those of you that have been involved in SWIFT, you might recall InnerTribe a few years ago worked on something called the Digital Asset Grid. It bears a striking resemblance to what we see, sort of the work that's coming out of R3 in terms of the blockchain stuff and so forth as well. Some of the other news, Deutsche Bank has announced an axing of jobs. We're seeing the big banks starting to shed old banking jobs, the traditional stuff, traditional manual processes, bank tellers, these sorts of jobs are increasingly being threatened by the technology reformation of banking, or fintech as it is otherwise known, fintech. So some more news on the fintech space. Let's get Ian Card to join us right now. Ian Card is the financial reporter with Quartz Magazine. Welcome back to the show, Ian.
Hey, Brett. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's good. It's been a couple of weeks. So what news have you got for us? So there's some more movements on the Apple Pay front, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. So on the earnings call earlier this week, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, announced that they're expanding Apple Pay to Canada and Australia by the end of the year, which is pretty important because, contactless payments in those countries are pretty popular with mainstream consumers. So it could be a big plus for Apple Pay.
Yeah, I think contactless payments are, well over 70% in Australia right now.
Yeah, and Canada. And it's interesting because these countries have also had EMV for a little while too. Yeah. So, I wrote a piece earlier this month about how the EMV shift in the U.S. could really jumpstart contactless payments in the U.S. as well.
And so, as part of sort of this retooling of point of sale, how quickly do you expect the U.S. to start to catch up with some of these more advanced economies when it comes to payments?
It's hard to say. I think my estimation would probably be 5 years max. It's definitely tough to say though, because payments is kind of difficult to predict. It's very hard to predict the whims of the consumer.
You mean consumers are whimsical?
I know, shocking, right? Yeah, but shocking. It's definitely hard. It's definitely hard to change consumer behavior. The best benefit that Apple Pay and all these mobile wallets have is that they're a little bit more frictionless and a little bit faster than the EMV dip. And, yeah. You know, once people get in the habit of it, they start to, it's a pretty seamless interaction. So that's definitely a benefit it has over chip cards. And it's also more secure with tokenization.
So what else are you hearing about Apple Pay's adoption in the U.S. generally?
You know, there are all these research reports that say, oh, contactless payments, Apple Pay usage is not great in the U.S. But, you know, we have to remember that, you know, it's only available on like a handful of devices. You know, there's a recent report came out saying that, you know, a lot of a big chunk of Apple users are still on, you know, iPhone 5 and 5S's. And I think that's pretty important because those phones don't have Apple Pay. So, you know, if they're, you know, once they start upgrading their phones to more, you know, current iterations, you know, that could also boost usage down the line too.
Cool. Anything else you're hearing on the rumor mill that we should be watching for?
Well, not on the rumor mill. Actually, I forgot to mention that, you know, in 2016, Apple Pay is going to be available in Starbucks, and they're also branching out to Spain, Singapore, and Hong Kong. So I think that's pretty notable too.
So Apple really is going to start to look for, you know, competing, it looks like, with not just with banks for payments, but even MasterCard and Visa potentially. Although they're cooperating right now with MasterCard and Visa.
They're cooperating now. I mean, I'm sure you saw the news out of Money 2020 that Chase announced Chase Pay, which is pretty ambitious for a bank to, you know, they.
But have they really? They missed their chance. I mean, banks could have done this three, four years ago, right? But
right.
You know, here's the thing. Banks are like, well, we'll wait until it's mainstream and everyone's adopted it. By that stage, when everyone has adopted it,
they're already using something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the problem is this. Now, on the plus side for the banks, now, you know, if you say Chase Pay, like a mainstream consumer, like my parents, for example, will understand that, oh, it's a mobile wallet. Before, you know, you had to explain the entire what a mobile wallet was and the benefits of that. So, you know, now I was just talking to my parents about Chase Pay the other day, and they understood what it was. Whereas, you know, before, maybe 3 years ago, I would have to explain why a mobile wallet's important, you know, what tokenization is and that kind of stuff.
That's part of the learning curve. I mean, I can probably bet in the 1970s as Diners Club was starting to launch their service, you had to explain to people what a credit card or a charge card was.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the credit card adoption, which was decades ago, wasn't easy. You know, I've heard stories and I've, you know, read.
Yeah, actually, it'd be interesting. You know, we should do that between you and I and the fintech mafia. What we should do is actually try and look at historical deployment of credit card. You know, those early credit card programs.
Yeah,
compare it with mobile adoption right now. Because my bet is that mobile adoption is probably occurring at 3 to 5 times faster than what credit card adoption did back in the 70s. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, it's interesting. They used to, you know, when the credit cards first came out, you know, there was no swipe. They had to do this, like, they had this other weird machine that I've never even seen. And
what was that called? The knuckle buster?
Yeah.
You've never seen one of those. You're a millennial, man.
I know, right? Yeah, I've never seen
one of those. Buster. You never actually used a knuckle buster. Well, there you go. Showing my eyes.
So
I learned to code on punch cards as well. So,
my editor was telling me the story, and I was like, "Wait, I've never even used this thing."
Yeah, well, so, you know, I have a picture of one in Bank 2.0 if you want to check it out.
Yeah, well, I have the book, so I'll definitely. I probably missed it. I probably didn't understand it the first time I read it, but I'll go back and check it.
No problem. Hey, did you hear about our news with Movin's news at Cybos the other week?
Yeah, if you want to talk about that real quick. Please.
So we just did our Series B announcement for $12 million. So that brings to total about $24.5 million that we've raised from Movin right now. So, you know, in the current environment, it's actually pretty tough to put together B rounds like that. I have a great respect for Josh and Shamir, but I think part of the reason they probably made the decision to sell to BBVA at the time was that it was difficult to raise money on an ongoing basis. So,
yeah.
It was a bit of a relief for us. It was a hard round to put together this time.
Yeah. So let's talk about what you guys are going to do with that money. Are you guys expanding? I know you guys are expanding internationally and have big partnerships now.
Well, you know, we're about to launch with TD in Canada. That's imminent. Yep. You know, soft launch is...
The Accenture partnership, I think, is pretty exciting.
Yeah, Accenture. Look, we've got possibilities with Accenture in all over the place, in Brazil with partners there, in France, in other parts of Europe. You know, that's where it's sort of paying off right now. I think it's going to be a few months before we can announce some of those partnerships, but it's... It's pretty interesting, but I think it's just a matter of you know, for us right now is bringing, you know, improving the size of the team and the skill set so that we can really focus on these global launches and getting a number of them out quickly. You know, there's obviously a lot of banks now who are more open to partnership with
fintechs. Definitely.
That's shifted. And so as a result, we've got a lot more work coming down the pipe around those sort of partnerships. And so our model, which, you know, where we pivoted from that pure direct-to-consumer model about 18 months ago to this sort of, you know, distributed app model where, you know, we were looking for other bank partners to help us with distribution, it really has worked out to be a pretty solid move because everything's...
Yeah, and I mean, you see big, you see these big social media companies doing, you know, doing very similar things too. So it's definitely when it's well executed, definitely is a strategy that works.
Yeah, I wonder, by the time we've got sort of 10 bank partners in different countries around the world all on MOVEN, you know, with all of this data that we're getting in terms of mobile payments, behavioral data and things like that, I wonder who would be, you know, looking to acquire that sort of network. That sort of does change.
Yeah.
It does change.
You know, I was talking to a lending startup recently and they said that you know, down the line, it seems like for the lending companies, especially the acquirers won't be like, you know, typical financial institutions, but more of a Google who can, you know, utilize that data and, you know, get into the underwriting business potentially.
Absolutely. So listen, you know,
I do have one more question about MOVEN, if that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, I ask every bank that I talk to and, you know, you're a digital bank. So I wanted to ask you guys, flipping the interview a little bit, but,
that's fine.
So, what do you think about Bitcoin, blockchain? Are you guys experimenting with that at all?
So yeah, we are looking at the blockchain stuff. Bitcoin for us is, you know, there's really not any demand from our consumers for Bitcoin per se.
Right.
But in terms of the blockchain, you know, some things that we could do, for example, with blockchain, you know, by linking it to a card is, for example, flexibility around issuance of new sub-accounts. So, for example, if you know, sort of things we're thinking about is joint account offering or you want to give your kid an allowance and you want to do that without having to go through a typical IDV structure. You know, so being able to issue a token through host card emulation, but using, you know, sort of blockchain as the structure for that rather than a sort of a typical account structure. There's some things like that that we're really interested in.
That's really compelling. Probably, yeah, that's, you know, there's so many advantages with that blockchain. And, you know, it's definitely something that I think of interest with these financial institutions. You know, Amex and MasterCard recently made their, over the past 2 weeks, made their first investments in the space too.
Yeah, better late than never, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. You know, this is the big question. As the Internet of Things really sort of takes off, how are you going to give your smart car or your smart fridge a bank account? You know, you're not going to take them down the branch to sign a signature card, right?
Yeah.
So this is, the current account and identity structure that we have will not survive the next 10 years in terms of structure. So blockchain is really part of the answer to that. That's sort of basically strategically where we see it. So,
well, I'm definitely excited for that, you know, shift to occur.
Cool, Ian. Well, look, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Brett. Thanks for having me on.
We'll have you on in a few weeks. I know you're working on something interesting regarding Uber and some other stuff. So when you're ready to talk about that, we'll get you to come back on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So listen, as we say goodbye to Ian there, let's invite to the show now Alejandro Cosentino. He's the founder and CEO of Affluenta. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Alejandro.
It's correct.
And this is a peer-to-peer lending community across LATAM and Latin America. So this show is going to be, for the rest of the show, we're going to talk about fintech in LATAM. And also Vicente Fonel, who is from Cubo Financiero. Is that right, Vicente?
Yes, it's okay.
Yeah, good, good. And Vincente has had more than 20 years in the financial services sector, working with banks and looking at the problem of high interest rate, lack of transparency, and lack of financial inclusion, basically. So we're going to be talking about financial education and economic citizens and so forth for some of the show. Then later in the show, we're going to be talking to iZettle, who has been working out of LATAM as well on some of the stuff that they're doing. So first of all, Alejandro, you played a pretty critical role in the revamp of Amex Latin America and their Caribbean businesses during the 90s. What do you think about all this mobile payments push and what's happening with these different players and now Chase Pay coming in? What's the landscape going to look like in 5 or 10 years' time, do you think?
I was working, in the credit card space, when we were using different machines, to process all the information. That was an entire manual process. I was listening to you that you said in 5 years, the landscape will be different. I bet you that in 2 years, the landscape will be entirely different. Yeah. I believe that in the approximately 18 months, Apple Pay will be rolling out across Latin America, and the speed of the change, for replacing, those terminal processing, credit cards, payments will be totally obsolete. We are facing an entire new process in Latin America.
It's a seismic shift, that we can use that word, right?
Exactly. And we have a 35% and growing, of the cell phones in Latin America are smartphones, it's moving quickly.
Yeah, and so tell me a little bit more about your P2P network that you're building in LATAM.
We launched in 2012 the first peer-to-peer lending company in Latin America, and 2 weeks ago we moved, to launch in Peru. Can you hear me, Brett?
Yeah, no problem.
Good. We connect borrowers and lenders. Banks are quite expensive. The bank spread across Latin America is huge. For example, in Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, the banking spread, the people are need to pay for getting a loan is huge, while the money they are getting when they put the money to work in CDs across Latin America is ridiculous. Just to give you an idea, in Brazil, inflation is 7-8%, but the people in a CD receive approximately 5%. In Argentina, inflation is a little bit high. So we get, approximately 20% from a CD a year when the inflation is 25%. But when you go to a bank, interest rate, for loans approximately in 75%. So we connect borrowers.
75%.
And in Brazil,
crazy.
credit card are 200% a year, 200. Oh, it's amazing. And the cost of the money for banks are ridiculously low.
There's a huge opportunity to lower the cost.
That's the region because I'm rolling out Affluent across the region, the amazing opportunity we have in our hands.
So are you guys actually live?
Yes, we are live in Argentina. We are live in Peru. We are moving to Mexico just to compete with my friend Vicente in Mexico. So, we have a rollout plan, launching in Brazil next year. So, and of course, in Colombia, Chile. We have an incredible platform like you have with Moven, and we have that kind of platform for peer-to-peer lending. We have, probably the most advanced, technology for connecting borrowers and lenders across Latin America.
That's awesome. Now, I want to get to Vincente, but Vincente, we'll bring you in just after the break because we're about to break. But Alejandro, what sort of loan book do you have right now in terms of, do you disclose that, how much you've lending so far?
Yes, sure. One of the beauty of the P2P lending is that you have, 100% transparency on the data and the loan originated.
Sure.
We originated $7.5 million, more than 2,500 loans.
Wow.
With more than 1,800 lenders, and the base is growing, $750,000 dollars a month and growing, and of course,
What's the average loan size that you're talking about?
Approximately $3,000.
Is that about monthly salary? So it sounds a little bit higher than the monthly salary.
It's a little bit of a little bit higher of a monthly salary. A monthly salary in Argentina probably is about a half of that, and but it's stable on that. And usually the people is asking loans, you know, for making home improvement, replacing a car. I mean, consolidating debts, and that is the use of the money.
Okay, so listen, let's take a quick break, and then Vicente will ask you to give your perspective on Kubo and what you're doing there as well. So listen, guys, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. We'll be right back after these few words from our sponsors. This is Brett King, the host of Breaking Banks. We've got some exciting news for you. We've just joined with Radio Everyone and the United Nations on their Global Goals Initiative. Now, this is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. So, Breaking Banks, we're planning a special episode on October the 1st to talk about the organizations around the world that are using fintech to increase financial inclusion, to eradicate poverty, and reduce inequality. Join us at Breaking Banks and the team at Radio Everyone on the UN Global Goals Initiative to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, you are back with Breaking Banks. You can follow the discussion, the conversation on Twitter. Our hashtag is Breaking Banks. Just a quick shout out. You know, you guys know Rachel, our producer. She puts together the show. I just turn up and ask the questions. But she's also a huge podcast fan, and she has a recommendation she'd like you guys to consider. The first is Dave Birch's Tomorrow's Transactions Today podcast. You can find that under Consult Hyperion on iTunes. Dave Birch is, you know, as you guys know, is smart, witty. He gives us great interviews on the show here. So check it out. You can also check out chip.com. That's chyp.com. And also a quick shout out to our fantastic sponsors of Breaking Banks, which is Temenos. So don't miss our show next week. We're going to be talking about RegTech as well on Breaking Banks, a little bit more about that before we finish off the show. But before the break, we were talking to Alejandro from
Argentina.
From Argentina, the peer-to-peer lending community, Afluenta, and Vicente Fornell from Kubo Financiero. Vicente, welcome to the show.
Hi, Fred. Thank you very much. We are your fans reading your books here at the company.
Thank you.
Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have fans on the show and participate as well. So tell me about the work that you guys are doing at Kubo and the model. And is it any different, in Mexico to other parts of LATAM?
Yeah. Well, I'm the CEO and founder of Kubo. Before Kubo, I was a founder of FinComun. That is one of the largest traditional microfinance companies in Mexico. And the problem that we face in common with the traditional model, it was with branches, bricks and mortar, was the cost, the high operational cost. So we were charging to our borrowers more than 90%, in average 100 and 120. And we were paying to
120%?
Yeah, annually. Nice. And so it was quite expensive for the borrowers. Mexico is has one of the highest interest rates in the world, maybe behind Brazil, as Alejandro told before. And 3 years ago, I decided to create a new way to manage my life, and then we create Kubo. Kubo is a peer-to-peer and a marketplace company. We connect lenders and borrowers. We have individuals and institutions doing the lender side. And the main difference is that using, as you mentioned in your book, using technology, risk analysis, algorithms, we are declining very fast the cost of the transactional costs. So we can charge.
So are you actually finding? I know that you've got much lower rates than the traditional incumbents there. But are you finding that you're able to manage default risk better as well? I mean, we've seen that consistently with the likes of Lending Club and Zopa, particularly in the UK, who's been on the show a couple of times. Do you guys find you're better at managing risk as well?
Yeah. With the models we are developing, every day we are improving that models. We are trying to find the best borrowers. And our model today is between 3 and 10 times better than the credit scores that the credit bureau provides to us.
Yeah.
But we are
3 to 10 times better. That's fantastic.
Yeah. But we're combining the credit bureau information, the behavior of the borrowers on the website, social networks, and we are combining with other sources of information.
So, you know, what have you found from a data perspective? And Alejandro, you might answer this as well, okay. Because you guys are both in markets where the credit agency system, the credit scoring systems, are fairly immature. There is some data there, but what data are you finding is most useful for you in determining real credit risk for the people you're lending to?
In Kubo case, Mexico has a great credit bureaus, so we have good and bad information and sad information around the credit information of the borrowers. So combining that information with the behavior of how the people use our web page, we found points of risk. For example, if they use the simulators, they are less riskier than people that they don't use that. Or how many times they spend to type information on the process, it helps us.
But so if they use a loan calculator or a simulator on the website, they're riskier than someone that doesn't.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a really interesting correlation. I wonder, I wonder why that behavior is there. But is that? Do you think that's a result of financial education issue?
I think so, because I say that that's a psychological movement of the borrower. He's thinking about his future or her future. Yeah. And he's trying to understand the amount of the payment and how it impacts in his income. So it's huge that we are finding. And like this, we have another 10 points on the process that we found.
When the people start to find out...
In Argentina and other
ways. Yeah, I mean, some similarities. I mean, we are collecting information from social networks. You know, there is a lot of information in Facebook, which is one of our main channels, you know, to acquire borrowers. And we are, I mean, accessing at some of the information they provide. And we made some correlations that is complementing the credit bureau's predictive payment behavior. I mean, in Argentina...
Can you be specific what sort of information off the social networks you're getting?
Yeah, for example, you know, we have something that is called neural networks, and based on the neural network we have and based on the different payment behaviors, you know, we are addressing in the social networks, you know, we can add points or deduct points, you know, from the credit bureau we are getting from the credit bureau. I mean, the way they privilege, you know, the some likes or don't likes, you know, we have some correlation if they have like or don't likes banks, you know. I mean, it's amazing, but I mean, it's the way they are performing well. And in addition to that, you know, we are getting more, we are checking familiar information, you know, family information in those profiles. And in addition to that, you know, in the way that the people, you know, complete the information on the application form is also important, not only for just identifying some frauds, but also, you know, just to see if the amount of money they are asking is the right amount, you know, for the needs they have. I mean, it's a big combination of different data, you know, we are aggregating into the process just to deduct or adding points, you know, to the application. And in addition to that, you know, let me tell you that the information in Argentina and Peru are quite good. We don't have positive information in Chile and Brazil in Latin America, but the rest of the market, they have, you know, positive and negative information in the bureau, and we have bureaus like Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion present in our markets.
Hmm. Let me ask you guys a question. You know, in terms of Latin America overall, you know, culturally, how does things like you know, peer-to-peer lending, how does it fit culturally? How are people responding to it from a cultural perspective?
In Mexican case, that we are finding is that people, well, we have a difference with other countries that Cubo decided to be a regulated institution. So we got a license from the...
You got a proper lending license.
Yeah. So we got a license to keep savings from the public with a license from the Mexican government. And we are using that to help the company to create trust in our lenders and the borrowers. And that we are finding is that the people like to go to the website, type the information, create an application of the borrowers, or the lenders hire the contract also an account. And that we are finding is that a lot of millennials, for example, in our case, are opening accounts, and they want to save or invest in the projects of the borrowers. And that's amazing because we have a lot of people less than 38, and every day they go inside our web page and invest again in the borrowers.
So do you both find that you're getting a higher percentage of millennials, or is it the demographics across the board?
Yeah, in our case, about one-third of the lenders are millennials.
Okay.
And they are quite active in the process. We have also baby boomers, Generation X.
Yeah.
I'm a baby boomer.
Yeah. You're a baby boomer.
So,
you know, what is important in this process, you know, Brett, is the people in Latin America cannot explain why the difference of the active and passive interest rate are so high. I mean, essentially, the relationship with financial services from the people across Latin America and around the world is sometimes you have money and you want to save, you know, and save for some purpose in the future. And sometimes, you know, you don't have enough money just to conclude your project. So you need to ask for a loan. So essentially, the people understand that sometimes you need to ask, sometimes you need to save. But, I mean, they cannot understand why in Latin America the difference of those rates are incredibly high. So the acceptance of the
people... The spread is huge, right? What's the spread?
The spread in Argentina, for example, is about, you know, 40%. In Peru, it's about 35%. In Brazil, it's over 100%. I mean, in Mexico, it's about 40%. So what we have in this market is that since the people cannot explain that, they cannot understand, and banks has not been very educative about that, they have been building the model based on physical branches. And for everything, they call you to the physical branches. And the people cannot, I mean, go out from the daily life they have, you know, drop their work, drop the things they are doing just for going to the bank. So the solution we are offering to them is easy. 63% of the people are asking loans in Afluenta, you know, outside banking business hour. So, I mean, from midnight to 9 a.m., you know, 10% of the people are asking loans in Afluenta. I mean, in the night, you know, it's essentially we are helping them to save time. Time is money for them also.
Yeah. Now, the other aspect here is that, and for many of our listeners, they might not know this, but the highest social media penetration in the world is actually in LATAM, right, I think?
Yeah, five of our 5 of the 10 markets outside United States and China are from Latin America: Brazil, Mexico, Argentina, Colombia, and Chile. I mean, it's the penetration we have in the market is 75 and over.
And smartphone penetration is growing very rapidly. Argentina has very good smartphone penetration. Colombia now is getting Colombia, I think, has higher smartphone penetration than the United States right now.
It's amazing.
So you think of LATAM as some in the West may think of LATAM as technologically behind the West, but in terms of social media and smartphone adoption, that's not what we're seeing. So do you think that there's a parallel with the sort of take-up of social media and what we see potentially for the take-up of peer-to-peer lending?
Yeah,
no question.
We don't have no doubt about that. So it's incredible the number of people that are using social networks in Mexico, more than half of the population, smartphones. So it will grow very fast. And the use of new online services, not only peer-to-peer, online dev, shopping, etc., is growing very, very fast. So the change that will happen, for example, in Mexico in the next 3 or 4 years should be huge.
Let me tell you some information about acquisition channels. Since Facebook started, you know, to
I was going to ask you exactly about this, whether you use social media for acquisition.
Facebook started to privilege, you know, links instead of likes. I mean, e-commerce started to grow amazingly, you know, with Facebook in Latin America. And if, for example, in Argentina, you know, Afluente is one of the top 3 advertisers in Facebook, and we are getting 38% of our loan application from Facebook.
I mean, what's surpassing 38%?
Yeah, 38%, surpassing Google. I mean,
can you talk about your cost of acquisition through Facebook?
Yeah. I mean, it's around $100, you know, per CPA. The CPA is $100.
Well, I tell you what, man, you know, you got a bit of catch-up to do with moving. We got our cost of acquisition through Facebook Direct now down to $5 for a application.
I mean, that, of course...
We can compare some notes offline. I can share that with
you. But we can get more money from moving, you know, from every transaction, I'm sure.
Well, in Mexico, it's happening the same. In our case, 60% came from Facebook.
60% from Facebook.
Yeah, the digital customers. So
if you walk into a bank in Mexico or Argentina or in the United States, how many banks do you think are acquiring 1% of their business through Facebook? But pretty much none, right? There's three of us right now talking, and each of us get more than 30% of our business or our new customer acquisitions through Facebook. That says something for fintech.
Yes, of course.
Absolutely. So listen, guys, we're coming up to break. Just before we get to our break, I'll go to you first, Vincente. Where can people find out about Kubo and you know what you're doing with the business?
Hi, John Lee is kubofinanciero.com. Was your question?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, of course. We have a big advantage because we're regulated. You can be a lender living in the U.S. or in another country. The regulation in Mexico allows in order to open accounts for foreign people. So if you can invest with us, welcome on board.
Great, fantastic. And Alejandro, where can we find out about...
Afluenta.com, AFLUENTA.com. And we are also in .pe, that is our Peruvian site. I mean we are in both countries.
Okay, so let me ask you both a quick question. How long before peer-to-peer or peer-to-peer lending represents across Latin America approximately $1 billion of lending, which is seems to be the magic number?
5 years. In five years, we'll be having your $1 billion transaction in our markets.
Yeah, within the same, 4 or 5 years.
And we will have, you know, 35% of that.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks, guys. Just before we go to the break, if you're interested in some latest technology, it's very interesting. Check out gizmodo.com today. There's an article on forgery of artwork. Forgery is getting so good these days that scientists have had to invent keys made from DNA to authenticate now original paintings. So this is you know, with the use of technology and so forth, that forgeries are just getting that good. So check it out. It's an interesting article on gizmodo.com. Vincente and Alejandro, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back after the break with iZettle, and we're going to be talking to Anders from iZettle about what they're doing in Brazil. Okay, we'll be right back after this break.
Your world to look like in 2030. This is Rachel Morrissey, the producer of Breaking Banks, and we are joining the UN Global Goals Initiative and participating in Radio Everyone this week from September 25th to October 2nd. Global Goals is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. To find out more about Global Goals and Radio Everyone, go to www.globalgoals.org.
Time. There's never enough. You just don't have the time to search out all the latest banking innovations from around the world. But the good news is, we've already done it for you at Banking Reports. 700 hours of research goes into each edition of our Global Banking Innovation Monitor. Be smarter and get one step ahead. Get Banking Reports sent quarterly to your inbox. To subscribe, follow us on Twitter at banking_reports.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. You can follow the discussion, hashtag #BreakingBanks on Twitter. One of the news items that caught my attention this week was that a consortium of UK startup bosses, fintech startups, about 230 of them, wrote to David Cameron in the UK, the Prime Minister. And this is from, you know, organizations we've had on the show before, Nutmeg, TransferWise, and so forth. And they petitioned the UK government not to take a tough line on immigration. Now, this is going to be a hot topic in the US soon as well. And they really said that, you know, the UK has become this global tech hub for startups and founders from around the globe. But there's so many of these people that have come to London to start these fintechs that have come from overseas. They're fearful that reducing net migration levels will really throttle the progress of fintech and startups in general. Now, we're seeing this happen in the United States and in markets like Australia, where we're starving for talent, where education is not able to keep up with the demand of creating STEM jobs, and immigration is a way to soften that demand. The upshot of this is, if you restrict immigration of technology skill sets into the market, then 10 to 15 years out, it's going to have a pretty significant impact on competitiveness of your market. So that's the key message from these startup bosses in the UK. It might even have shorter term impacts in that as well, actually. So if you're interested in that, check out the letter that the these startups wrote to David Cameron. Right now, we want to talk about iZettle. And we have joining us from the head of Brazil Payment Service of iZettle, Anders Novinda. Anders, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brett.
Now, just a quick one. While we're on the break and we were just chatting, we found out we have a common friend, which is Goran Anderson. And so we should give him a quick shout-out. And, so, and, you know, I don't know if he's listening to the show today, but Goran, wherever you are in the world, a quick shout-out from Anders and I to say good day. I met Goran in Sao Paulo, actually, in 2006. So it's been a while, but you've known him for some time as well, right?
Well, I've known since 2004. We made a music show together in Sao Paulo. Well, he presented a music show that we sponsored at the time. And he's in and out of town every now and then. I try to catch up. Been a while now.
He is a bit of a nomad, isn't he?
He is, for sure.
He is. A nice guy. So listen, tell me a bit about, for those that aren't familiar with iZettle, we often call it the sort of, you know, we've referred to it as the Square of Europe before, but, that sort of maybe not a totally accurate position, but tell us about iZettle.
Well, iZettle is a Swedish company based in Stockholm. We're today present in 12 markets, mainly in Europe, in 10 markets in Europe, Mexico, and in Brazil. It started, was founded by Jakob Dier and Magnus Nilsson about 5 years ago and had a rapid expansion, as I said, in Europe. And then we started in Brazil in end of August 2013.
That's good. So what sort of payments volume or how many merchants do you guys have on iZettle? Can you talk about that?
Well, I'm not really able to talk about that, but I can say that in Brazil, we are a really fast-moving market. We have in Brazil about 31% of the mobile payment segment.
31% of the mobile payment segment. Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
So, do you do that with a phone-based dongle, and you're accepting card payments from people, or is it direct sort of P2P payments through wallets?
No, that's a dongle with a smartphone. So it is a pin pad accepting.
It's EMV capable?
Absolutely EMV capable.
So what are your thoughts? We had the discussion earlier on in the show in the first segment about NFC and mobile payments. What's iZettle's position on EMV and NFC technology generally?
We do take in Europe, we just launched in the UK, a NFC payment that accepts Apple Pay.
Okay.
So we're launching that. Let's say the next generation of card reader devices will accept Google and Apple Pay.
Yeah. So you got started in Brazil in 2012. You got a joint venture with Santander.
Yes, we
did. You've got about 30% of the market. So tell me about the sort of merchants or people that use iZettle in Brazil.
Well, the typical merchant, as we see it, is it could be a door-to-door sales consultant, someone who traditionally only used, took card payment, and were then, cash payment or check, and that were then restricted to only selling to the customer he or she knew would pay back.
Right.
So that's we can see is a typical customers of ours. It is a one man show, maybe a two man show, but they represent it's about 11 million of those, and they add up to 99.7%.
11 million merchants.
Yeah, 11 million merchants of that category.
Wow.
Of the SME. So and that adds up to 99% of the total amount of companies in Brazil. And over 50% of all jobs are in that segment.
Yeah.
And they represent 27% of the GDP.
And so they've largely been cash businesses previously, which is why it's important for them to become mobile.
They still have, according to Sebrae, which is, let's say, the organization that look after them in Brazil, it is still check and cash. It is over, it's about 60%.
60%?
Yeah, and the rest is then debit and credit, debit and credit card represent 31%.
Now, did you move to Brazil, or were you already located in Brazil when you started with Ozettle?
I was already living here for quite a number of years.
So is there significant cultural differences in terms of the use of Ozettle in Brazil versus, say, in Sweden?
Yes, there is. I mean, we have in Brazil the some unique features like the famous parcelas, the installments. I don't know if you know about them, Brett.
Is this sort of like a layaway plan, as they call it in the United States?
Yeah, what you do is you sell your product, and instead of you price it at 100 reais, you say it's 10 times 10 reais, and you pay that in 10 installments. Okay. It's a typical way of financing your purchase in Brazil.
So who underwrites that? Is it Santander underwriting those sort of in-store purchases?
It depends on the card issuer.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Oh, so you're just doing it, basically you're coming up with a payments plan, but it's backed by a typical Visa, MasterCard offer or deal.
It's a pretty interesting market because, as I said again, I mean, it's so big. It is growing. And now with the current economic turmoil in Brazil, we see a rapid increase of small businesses opening. I mean, over 1 million new businesses per year.
Now, prior to Ozettle, you were with Volvo, I understand.
Yeah.
Another great Swedish company.
Yeah.
So how did you make the jump from Volvo to payments?
Well, yeah, it seems like it's a big change, for sure. But they do have some similar aspects. I mean,
was it your knowledge of the Brazilian market and your work with distributors and agents or dealers? Is that sort of what made sense for Ozettle or yourself?
Yes. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, what I could contribute with, what I can contribute, is my knowledge in the market and explaining for a Swedish, rather young company, how Brazil works, because it's not that easy.
What's tough about Brazil, but what makes it special?
First of all, I mean, it's a very protective market. To get into the market is difficult. That's number one.
Right.
So it is also, let's say, other challenges, level of education in the market.
Education in what respect?
In general, basic education, access to education.
Yeah.
It's also, you could say, the technology. I mean, yes, we do have with the fifth largest smartphone market, whilst you cannot get coverage across everywhere with the signals, etc. You probably experienced that yourself.
Yeah.
But another token, it is again, coming back to just the pure size of the market.
Yeah. Well, what is the size of the market from Ozettle's perspective, do you think? You know, like,
I would say 11 million possible merchants. That's in our target group. And that's probably around the same as you would have in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of Ozettle's plans for the next 12 months or so, what are you guys trying to achieve apart from just continued growth? Is there new features you're going to be launching in Brazil, or what's your objective?
Well, I think we're a little bit different to other fintech companies, where we actually look at our merchant and base our new services or launch our new services based on his necessities.
Right. And so what are merchants asking Ozettle for in Brazil?
Well, what we did before we actually launched, we were the first one to offer all payments in 2 days, while in Brazil the traditional payment is in 30 days for credit card payments. So you, as a merchant, you receive your money after 30 days, while you probably pay your supplier within 10 to 15 days, and then you add up that with the interest rate
that you have, the cost of funding in Brazil, as we heard in the previous part.
Yeah.
We decided then to go.
Yeah, those interest rates are huge.
Yeah. So what we did was then to add, we anticipate all these receivables to 2 days. So we really.
So what do you guys charge in terms of service fee or interest?
And we do take, I mean, the credit card fees in Brazil are expensive.
Yes.
But we charge about 5%.
Yeah.
Let's say for a credit card payment, whilst the traditional solution would be 3.5%. But right. That includes for us the anticipation of from 30 to 2 days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, this is a big thing because we are pushing towards this real-time settlement in all aspects of payments. Do you guys feel that is inevitably where we're going with these systems?
It's hard to tell because the finance segment in Brazil is so traditional and so strong.
Mm.
And it's heavily regulated by the central bank. So unless the central bank goes in and says there's going to be real time, I don't think it would come by itself.
And so tell me about, how's it been working with Santander?
Yes, it's fine. I mean, in Brazil, you used to say no one likes the bank, but everyone respects the bank.
Yeah.
So for us, coming in as a newcomer, having a very strong, one of the largest banks in Brazil as our partner, gives us a quality seal.
Yeah.
That really helped us a lot.
So where can we find out about iZettle, Anders?
iZettle.com.
iZettle.com, great. And yeah, is there a Brazilian site, or are you just coming through .com?
iZettle.com.br. So
okay.
you find it when you can find through the different countries.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us and giving us a bit of an update on iZettle. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Brett.
All right, so just to finish up the show today, this is some news from some of my pals in the fintech mafia. I just read on Popular Mechanics, NASA is looking for programmers fluent in 60-year-old programming languages, especially Fortran and Assembler. They've got problems with the last original Voyager engineer is retiring at JPL, and they don't know anyone who can code in Fortran. And these languages are dying with the code. I don't like to say it like that, but anyway. So check that out, Popular Mechanics, why NASA needs a programmer fluent in 60-year-old programming languages. Thanks again to our supporters, Temenos, the sponsors of the show. It's been another Breaking Banks. Great to wrap it. Thanks for joining us again this week, guys. We will see you again next week talking about reg tech, regulation technology. I'm Brett King. That's the show. See ya.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.